Now we're going to read again from Nehemiah chapter 4, just a few verses, and then into 5 and 6. But it came to pass that when Sanballat heard that he builded the wall, he was wroth, and took great indignation, and mocked the Jews. And he spake before his brethren, and the army of Samaria, and said, what do these people do? Will they fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they make an end in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of the rubbish which are burning? Now Tobiah the Ammonite, who was violent, and he said, even that which they do, if a fox go up, he shall even break down to the stone wall. Hear, O our God, for we are despised, and turn their reproach upon their own head, and give them for a prey in the land of captivity. And cover not their iniquity, and let not their sin be blotted out from before thee, for they have provoked thee to anger before the builders. So built we the wall, and the wall was drawn together unto the heart of the rock, for the people had a mind to work. But see the parts that then Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were made up, and that the breaches began to be stopped, then they were very wroth, and conspired all of them together to come and to fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it. Nevertheless, we laid our prayer unto our God, and set a watch against them day and night because of them. Now, chapter 5. And there was a great cry of the people and of their wives against their brethren, the Jews. For the word that said, we are sons of our daughters are many. Therefore we take up corn for them that we may eat and live. For also their word that said, we have bought for land, vineyards and houses, that we might buy corn because of the brethren. There were also that said, we have borrowed money for the king's tribute, and that upon our land and our vineyard. Now, look at verse 15, verse 14. Moreover, from the time that I was appointed to be the governor in the land of Judah, from the 20th year even unto the 20th year of our Exodus, the king, that is 12 years, I and my brethren have not eaten the bread of the governor. The former governors that had been before me were chargeable unto the people, and had taken of them bread and wine. Besides, 40 shekels of silver, yea, even their servants were little over the people, but so did not I because of the fear of God. Yea, also I continued in the work of this war, neither fought me any man. All my servants were gathered thither unto the work. Verse 19, speak upon me, or remember me, O my God, for good, according to all that I have done for this evening. Now here the past when Sanballat and Tobiah and Ethan, the Arabians, and the rest of our enemies heard that I had builded the wall, and that there was no breach left within, though at that time I had not set up the doors upon the gate. But Sanballat and Ethan sent unto me, saying, come, let us meet together in one of the villages in the plain of Ono, for they fought to be missing. And I sent messengers unto them, saying, I am doing a great work, so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease whilst I need it and have found you? Yet they said unto me, four trains after this sort, and I answered them after the same manner. Then sent the Sanballat, the servant of the king, in like manner of time, with a token letter in his hand.
What is the book do?
It is reported among the heathens, and that view said it, that thou and the Jews take to the death. For the cause thou buildest the wall, that thou mayest be redeemed according to these words. And thou hast also appointed prophets that he shall be in Jerusalem, saying, there is a king in Judah. Now shall it be reported to the king according to these words. Come now therefore, let us make counsel together. Now, this I meet at verse number 10. Afterward, I came unto the house of Shemaiah, the son of Benaiah, the son of Nehemiah, who was shut up, and he said, let us meet together in the house of God, within the temple, and let us shut the doors of the temple, for they will come descending the eight in the night, for they come this day. And I said, if you such a man as I be, and who is there that being as I am, will go into the temple, is like, but will be. My God is sent for, my God remember God upon the fire, which is about upon the east west, and on the common head, Noadiah, and the rest of the prophets that we have put you in Jesus. I'll leave God to the Lord, will add his blessing to the reading of his second word, and give us all to understand it aright. Now, the first night on Monday when we were together, we had for our ministry a simple table, laying the foundation. And we saw that the foundations of any work consisted of what we termed a personal exercise. Individuality in the things of God is very, very important. We cannot move for God on the strength or in the spirit of another. It is something that is and develops within the compass of our own personal experience. But who it was with Nehemiah. And then we saw that another particle or part of that foundation was that it must be a prayerful exercise. And we saw something of Nehemiah's approach to God as he poured out his soul in relation to all that filled his heart for the people of God and the conditions at that time. Then we found that it must be a covenantal exercise. For very soon, Nehemiah witnessed in a most remarkable way the covenantal being of God in relation to his life, in relation to his exercise. God did it, and in a very humble way, took the heart of the king to grant him his respect in sending him, in granting him security, and in giving him all of the path he needed for his work. That brought us to chapter 3, you see, that it must be a practical experience. And last night, we might have entitled the message, Rebuilding, or Restoring the Fortress. Because necessity, as we saw last night, is occupied and the cost for us the building of the wall. Now, there are many things in that chapter we didn't have time to observe. I do trust what we said and suggested will be followed through and will be helpful for further meditation on that practical chapter. Now, it can be seen very clearly, brethren, that one of the great features of Nehemiah's work was this. He had the God-given ability not only to attend this work for God, but to bring into association certain steps that were committed to the work of the reconstruction. And that's why I use the word inducement. There was that touch and that feeling and that sympathy in the heart of Nehemiah that moved the hearts of all the heavenly point it was called. So I mentioned in chapter 3 of Nehemiah. Of course, there were deficiencies, there were disappointments, there were those that did not respond as they ought to have responded. But all hope, and with the account before us, it is good to see that the work progressed. When we read chapter 4 tonight, you will notice you have a progress pattern. Because it says in verse number 6, he took the wall and the walls run together under the half of the wall. So by the time he comes before verse 6, the half of the work is completed. There is another progress account in chapter 6, and usually it's in brackets in verse 1, and it is at that time I have not set up the doors upon the gates. That's another report. Under the comes the chapter 6 and verse 13, we have these glorious words, help us finish in the 20th and 50th of the month Elul in 50 and 2 days. And that's the final account as far as the reconstruction and the rebuilding of the walls is concerned. So it's good to see the mark of leadership that was seen in Nehemiah in being able to encourage and to induce the servants to work as they did. Now tonight we look at three chapters. We have to do that in order to make progress. And I'm going to summarize my remarks tonight in a very simple title, and it is simply this, facing the foe. Facing the foe. We have laid the foundation, chapter 1 and 2, and then we have the repairing or restoring the fortress, chapter 3, but now chapter 4, 5, and 6, facing the foe. As you know, and as you can see, I'm sure, as you've been reading the book, chapters 4, 5, and 6 follow through from chapter 3. While that is recorded in chapter 3 was going on, then of course the records of these three chapters and the details were going alongside, they were concurrent with the work. That will give us exactly how we must see these chapters together. So, I think we're put very, very well, chapter division often, they do not suit the passage at all. But on this occasion, I believe that these chapters are very well fixed. Because, if we look at the material, we see in chapter 4, how the enemy attacks the work of God. The enemy attacking the work of God. And that will be a simple title for chapter 4. In chapter 5, we see how the enemy assaulted the people of God. Not only did he attack the work, but in chapter 5, he assaulted the people. But then in chapter 6, the enemy turns to another object. And it's not so much the work of God, not so much the people of God, but it is, in a very specific way, the servant of God. He assailed the servant of God. Now, it is interesting to see those three chapters are discussed in that problem. You, of course, as you read it, may be able to design or describe it by some other way, but that's how I look at them, and I trust they will be of help to you. Now, we have to go through the three chapters, and what we'll try to do is to pick out those points that we feel would have a relevance to our particular needs. As we said last night, as we looked at chapter 3, we want to read it, of course, in light of the 10th history, in light of God's mind in recording it for us in those days, and then of course we see it have been given a fortnight for our learning, that we may be comforted by the Holy Scripture. So in chapter 4, I want you to think of the issues that are at stake. It is not the first time the enemy has, of course, attacked the West. It began very, very simply, if I may use that word, in chapter 2 and verse 10. If it could be that verse, you will find that the Balak and the Tobiah were slightly annulled, and they did complain that there was a man that had come to seek the good, the welfare of the people of the children of Israel. But then in chapter 2 and verse 19, it is increasing in a way. And there you see it is open content. They despise. They despise us. And so the enemy, of course, is intensifying and he's increasing his presence. But then when we come now to chapter 4 and verse 1, we see that then some valid earth. What is that little word, earth? These simple words are very precious because they come in again in verse further down in the chapter, and they come in again in other places. Now here is the word when the Balak heard that he stood in the wall. That is the news of God here. When he heard it, he took great indignation. He was wroth and he took great indignation. But that even stronger, great indignation and mocked the Jews. You know, it's a very serious thing to mock the people of God. And this man said that the law has been on without any meaning whatsoever. I want to notice what he was doing. He was up in Samaria with his cohort, and he was reviewing, I suppose, an inspection of police, the army of Samaria. Think of that army posted in that place. And think of this man, Sambalat, the army, and the overly presence. He turns in ridicule upon the people of God. He challenges the very pastor. He says, what do these people do? That's how he looked upon. He substituted more force upon than as the evil do. Then what else? Will they fortify themselves? He challenges the hope, take the mark of the what they were building the wall for. They were building the wall in order that they might have a fortification. They were building the wall with a point of security very much in mind. And so these men, and this man in particular, he was born upon the very hope that filled the earth of the people of God. And the world has been seen. The first thing they can mock of our hopes. The first thing they can destroy anything that we cherish. We'll do it today, and we're doing it. Then what else? Will they sacrifice? They certainly will. For that certainly was their intention. That was the whole purpose of being able to secure the land of the city so that the village of sacrifice may be preserved. And he asked, will they make an end in a day? Have they not the enthusiasm to see the thing through? You see how bitter and how entrenched the end of the day, the hatred is in the heart and hearts of these men. Will they provide the full part of the heat of the rubbish which are burned? He thought, they had problems. The first was this. The obstruction
kind of techniques, ridicule of their difficulties. He understood that they had a difficulty. He recognized it, but he took it in a very resolving way. And then his friend Tobiah, when he got a chance to address the cosmic company, he said, even though they did so, it would collapse.
Well, that wasn't a very commendatory statement as to the efficiency of God. Didn't seem they could even do what they set out to do. It didn't seem they would succeed in accomplishing their goals.
And so you can feel and you can hear the hatred that was burning in the hearts of these men out of carnal cynicism. They ridiculed the people of God in their passion, in their hope, in their confidence, in their very enthusiasm, and in their problems, and questioned their whole decision.
Well, if we examine the attitude of the world tonight, it has been changed. And the hope and question of it, we're not affected unduly by the pressure the enemy would bring upon our efforts in this team, a testimony for God in this confusing day in which we live.
Let us not be affected by it, and you can understand that when it was brought to the ears of Jeremiah, what did he say? Well, I mean, he said this. From Balak has heard. In verse 4 he said, I want to hear.
So he says, hear, O our God, for we are distraught.
Remember what I told you the first night. Every appearance of the enemy. Every hope of the enemy. This man has the blessed capacity of turning to God.
Turning to God. And from Balaker, Nehemiah is making sure one bigger, one longer than he hears. And he says, hears O God.
What was the effect upon the rest?
You know, these people were just very simple people at the best of all. We read in the previous chapter, they were rulers, and they were administrators, and they were very talented, and some of them were obviously very rich.
Go on, but they were just human. And the effect of this attack upon the earth comes out very, very clearly in what we're going to see in this intensified attitude of the earth. For not only God, Sambalat and Tobiah and his cohort show interest, but now they speak of Nimrod. Notice what it says in verse number 8. In verse number 8. And they conspired all of them together to come and to fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it. Now, let's go to the open conflict. Up to now, it has been extracted with. Up to now, it has been complete and content and cynicism. But now, it's going to turn to open conflict.
And I go to
that. That is, the enemy is intent in bringing the work of the group to peace. And now, if you look at this verse 7, you will see you have the and the Ammonites, and the Ashdodites, and if you look at the situation, you will find that they were actually encircled by these hostile enemies of the people of God. But why did they be on all sides Nevertheless,
there is a real answer in Nehemiah again, verse 9.
But we made our prayer of the Lord and set a watch against them day and night because of them.
The enemy is turning now from mere words to open violence.
And I'm asking myself, what effect has this upon the world?
Now I can see, and you can see, and it's good to see it,
that Nehemiah was able, and through kind of God, to rise above the text. And to lay hold upon it, Lord, verse 4, and to lay hold upon it, Lord, again in verse 9, and to be noting the valued account of Nehemiah's spiritual life.
We've been looking at that, and here are two very precious occurrences in this chapter.
Well, this is not the first incident of weakness amongst the people of God. We saw last night in chapter 3 and verse 5, there was deliberate avoidance of the Lord. Even though that the Christ repaired, yet their evil did not attend their name and do the work of the Lord. They were not in it. They passed it by, and they gave it no support whatsoever. So there was evidence of deliberate avoidance on the part of some of the people of God to be associated with this reconstructive work. But in verse 10 of chapter 4, the men of Judah, or the people of Judah, are as just as in Judah said, so it was the people of Judah, they said, the strength of the bearers of burdens is diminished. This is what I call to call despairing weakness. We are too weak to carry on.
Well, many testimonies are told because of this.
Many people have pulled up their activity for God because of this. And it seems that it was having an effect upon the people, the constant center of the enemy. For the people of Judah say, our strength, the strength of the bearer of burdens is the end. That is, we are overcome from the burden of the work, the pressure of the
burden. So, as far as we are concerned, that is how we feel. Our resources are too small, and the problems are too great. For it says, there is much rubbish. That is, it's going to take a long time to get away what is obstructing the reconstruction, even to think about the building of the work itself.
You can see that now. And you know, beloved, it's very, very interesting to see that the devil with his treasure, God making rules upon our hearts. And we can be occupied with the pleasure of the day to such an extent as to the reason why we desist from the work of the Lord.
And that's what it is.
It's strange that it should come from Judah, isn't it? It's a small fight. The kind of the Lord was touched. Here they are in this complaint, and they are despairing their weariness and their weakness.
They gave a complaint.
They speak of their complications, and they're about to throw, they're about to declare the fool the power of the day because they say, so that we are not able. Not able to build the wall.
And it's not that we are able to pocket all these excuses.
I know it's not easy, but I do trust that even in a country like this that is comparatively small in relation to the other countries throughout this land and in other places that you will not be hung by evil ones. You feel that you are overwhelmed or oppressed by the burden of all the devil wants. And we can secure it by bringing constant pressures of prayer upon the people of God, then of course you will lose yourself. You know, many people leave assembly, and many people pack up and go where the grass is greener and where the work appears to be easier, in order to avoid the issues that such a case of this and bring. You understand that very, very clearly. So it's a very, very practical issue to see the effect of the work of the devil that it has upon the work of the Lord. Now, report not only is the deliberate avoidance, chapter 3, verse 5, but not only is there the depressing or the despairing weakness, but look at verse number 12, that is depressive sinfulness. Well, and it came to pass that when the Jews which dwelt by them came, they said unto us 10 times, what places whence ye shall return? For what places whence ye shall return unto us, they will be upon you. In other words, these people are really afraid. Because, as you know, six of these men have come from different parts outside Jerusalem. The people of God, the city of Jerusalem, and of course their loved ones and their families were expelled. And there was this concern around the churches of Jerusalem that when they would return, they would be expelled through the pressure of the enemy and his intended onslaught. So you can see that in spite of what we have read last night, and the joy that has brought us to see these people working as they did, here is an appendix, as you will, on the chapter, and you see that there was an effect upon the work. They were given now the self-pity. They were seeking self-preservation. So we're not condemning them. We know we have to watch ourselves, we know we have to be careful, but I request that we're not sort of locked up and unruly. The work is too great to consider those kind of things in this day. Why, the more you see of the need of God's people in China, and the desperate poverty in India, and those great vast areas where there's so few working, you would really be touched on this one. That here in a land of such plenty, and of such comfort, we really do this on good life. I don't mean it in that sense. I'm speaking as general as I possibly can, and I'm not in the comfort of God. But what I am saying, and I have been saying it quite frequently, that it is possible we are preoccupied with the comfort and not facing the challenge of the work of the Lord. That is a difficult. And here were people who, in the midst of such an enterprise, were beginning to be affected by the pressure of the enemy. They're looking at the work and it's too great and their resources are too small. They're looking at themselves and they're thinking of their preservation and they're self-pitying rational ones that they call. They feel as the men won't do the work, they're going to be left exposed to the enemy. And so, what do we find? Again, Nehemiah comes forward with his task. How is that this man is? I think it's great to see how this man would give up guidelines on the face, these circumstances, and these conditions, as even amongst us today. The first thing, of course, is very, very clear, and I don't want to repeat myself because I'm going to summarize in a moment, but you see, in verse number 14, at the end, he talks about end. So he was able for that. He says to the people of God, remember the Lord.
the youth.
And it's not just Jehovah here. It's the river Adonai. I hope you notice the difference in these terms sometimes. And you see, he's looking at his covenant Lord that he was praying to whenever he was before our Esther. And he spoke of the sovereign Lord at the beginning of that last verse, in verse 11 of chapter 1, and ended it, remember, he called of this man. What a contrast. The Lord, the sovereign Lord, and then this man, the great king, but the contrast of the young. So here he is again. But this time, he has all the comfort. In order to comfort his people, what did he do? It says, and when he heard these things, therefore said I, verse 13, in the lower places behind the wall, and in the higher places, I even said the people after their families, with the swords, the spears, and the bows. He equipped them with the ability to defend themselves, and to defend the work, and to maintain the place and the public. Never give in. Never yield it to the pressure that this problem brought. He had an answer, and that answer, as you know, is very, very indicative of the provision God will be put. You notice what he did earlier. He made a prayer unto God, and he set a watch against them day and night because. Now let me say, to summarize this chapter very quickly, and I want to do it like this. What then with the attack on the work, and the effect this had upon the work, what is the prospect of the work? How is it going to go? By what means will the work progress and proceed with these circumstances revealed? Well, that's the answer we want. I trust that they're exercised because the enemy is unceasing in his attack tonight. But all the truth of God's people feeling the oppression and the pressure and are weakening to use that word. So what's the problem? I think that I can give you some answers that are right on the very surface of this chapter and then we'll get to chapter 5 for a few moments. And the first thing is this. Although I hear some ballots speak, and although I hear the people of Judah speak, the one thing that I do hear in this great chapter is the constant voice of prayer. Oh my brethren, let it be flat tonight. It doesn't matter what the enemy says. It doesn't matter what the overwhelming people of God may say. Our great responsibility is to have a constant voice of prayer in the presence of God for the rest of the testimony. Forever, that God may answer. A constant voice of prayer. Verse 4, I've asked you to look at that already. Verse 9, I want you to look at that, and then verse number 14. That is, throughout this chapter, the tremendous pressure, the refuge that Nehemiah wrote, is the refuge of what we will call, known as the good, such being the permit of gold. I know that he was hit at Hickory in stress. I know that he called upon God to judge him. I think he had the right to do that because he was living in a day when God was moving with the nation among them. And that, of course, brings out the exercise that often disturbs us. In the book of Psalms, where godly men implicate the code of God and desire vengeance. Now, in the New Testament, we look at In the New Testament, is at the end of the night with pay for us. In the New Testament, you get the idea of heaping coals of fire upon the head. And we understand the reason. We have, of course, a different way. But Mr. Mother, let us not forget this. Let us not forget this. That it is not, it, well, I'll put it the way it should be, it is a righteousness. The law. Bring tribulation upon men in the trouble. It is a righteousness. And while we wouldn't say that, the Apostle Paul and the court of a picket face in Thessalonica, he wrote to them very thing in the second epistle, chapter 1, as you know, and he says, it is a righteous thing of God to recompense tribulation upon them that trouble. For a move that are troubling the people of God. It is a righteous thing of God to be with us. Not that we would pray that God would be with them in that day. I think that we would rise above all that. But, Paul said, it is a righteous thing of God. And we understand what the apostle is. And then, probably was there a constant voice of prayer, but there was the ceaseless vigilance of God. That lovely word is something to be treasured in verse 9, and it says, set a watch. And you know how efficient that really was, as the rest of the chapter will tell you. Because, thank God, it enabled these people to be encouraged and comforted, and you will then now, what effect has this? We have seen the effect of the enemy, but now when Nehemiah places the whole case before God and answers the problem as practically as he possibly can, what is the end? Oh, I think it's wonderful, brethren. I think it's most encouraging. I trust you all enter into the joy of this in verse number 15. Then he returns all of us to the Lord. Thank you. That's back to the word of God. Every one of us, everyone unto his work. Thank you, listen. Back to the wall. Not the back to the wall, but the back. That is, they will resume it, the work again, and everyone unto his work. They were encouraged. They were able to rise up above the system. Was approaching, then there was the sound of the trumpet, the warning sound of that silver trumpet. And then they had this reassurance, I love this, that our Lord shall fight for us. And you put those things together, I'm quite sure you will enjoy that chanting. And then finally, they were so devoted, and the work became so demanding, that, as I said, the last verse of this chapter is very difficult in the translation, and it would mean that they didn't put off the clothes, and said that I, like the other way the wise makes it is that when they did come to wash, when they did come to the water, they still carried the leather. Even in all natural things that were required of them, that was an absolute necessity, even under those circumstances, they the wrongfulness
in relation to the end.
And it's possible that we can relax at certain times, but it's probably just seem that this has been charged for us.
And they went through the wall, worse. And they carried out that. And they listened for the warning sign.
And they had the good word of God.
And even when they went to the water, neither they did wrong the off the fools except the one. Although they did not, they still had it. So, I trust that the little blood blue chapter 4 will help us in this.
So, every work of God has its own internal problems. And we have told some of it. First of all, in chapter 3, verse 5, there was deliberate avoidance. In 4, verse 10, there was discerning willingness. They said, look, we are tired, the burden is too thick, the resources are too small, and the rubbish is too far.
And then, there was that the pressing fear that came upon them. In relation to the hope of
the devil comes in to destroy them.
He comes in to destroy
them. And in the chapter, that's a very, very practical chapter, and yet I'm sure we do not be ready. And I'm going to call it disrespectful belief.
Amongst the people of God, one to another.
You see how the devil, and you see how the enemy is unfolding the whole thing, getting closer and closer and closer. Moving us in that very simple attitude of high neighbor,
then right criticism, and then round the open conflict as it comes up and all it didn't come.
And then the attack of the people of God in some not doing the work, and others getting tired of it, another feeling exposed because of it.
But right inside went on that obviously has stunned it. The leader.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a puppet. Have you lived up time in order to be at the work of the Lord? Up north of the most best they could be in the shop of a handbook and turn the wall at the same time? For a minute, they couldn't be in the office, and at the same time, what floor to follow, building the wall, and what floor was that easy?
Not only was there a material sphere, but there was a financial sphere. Truth was there.
Due to the demands of the long 50-odd days, these men had to forego work. But as I repeat it, and let me repeat it again, the two men who did it for one time, they got very uncomfortable. But in the midst, there were men who were taking advantage
of the situation. When people came for goods, they demanded more. When the harvest was done, they were able to lend the plenty on a very high. That's the way of the world. You understand that in the term, but can you understand that amongst the people of God that were told never to resort to you?
The first six verses give us the report. How's the report? Notice how this dear man puts it out there. People were sold.
The corner, they had no money. Their mortgage was out.
there has to be what is necessary for living. And under those extenuating circumstances, there were men taking advantage of the merchandise in the same cost. So, beloved, I need to you that there is a extreme careful in these matters. So where it comes to us, what the tragic thing is that spirit should come amongst the people of God. Now that is the situation here. You understand that almost a similar thing given in the Acts of the Apostles chapter 6. The first great difficulty amongst the people of God in that Christian day. And here was this one going so well, and reigning, moving on to climax. Here is an exposure of disrespect of evil one another under circumstances that call something harsh. Verses 7 to 11 gives us the abuse. Nehemiah says, brethren, this kind of attitude can disrupt the oneness of God. Not what he says. Yet our flesh, he makes it clear, our flesh is of the flesh of our children. Our children are their children. And though we bring into bondage our sons and our daughters, to be servants, and so on, by this spirit, he says, this is the very oneness of God's people. That's his first note of the view in verse number 9. And then you notice that it disturbs the fearfulness, or it disturbs the reverential fear of God. Also I said, it is not good that you ought ye not to walk in fear of our God. And then, of course, it is said as the testimony. What are the outsiders saying? He says, because of the approach of the heathen are in you. What? Leviathan and nation, and these hostile adversaries get to hear that the people of God are in disarray among themselves. What will their attitude be? And then, first of all, what may have done, and I have told and I hope you know your sort of children on it. My wife and I had a great time with the Eastern Day as we get it morning by morning. I don't think they enjoy the food as much for a long time. And verse 11 summarizes it. They were not here exact for corn, wine, oil, olive blood, in what? They were beholding the word of God. You can see how this man is able to put a hand upon the people as it reveals among them. He looks and sees it disturbs the oneness. It affects their fear of God. It pulls the testimony. And of course, now when he has poured out this rebuke, I want you to notice the response. Look at the response. I think it's coming. Then said they, we will restore that. And will require nothing of so will we do. Isn't that good? Isn't that good? So with a wholehearted response, in the able way this man put his hand upon the head and the day. We would perfect. They would come. They said, we will do what he said. Well,
Having done that, verse 13, he said, well, if you dare do it, the way I'm going to shake, and his rock stripped, and he threw it out, he said, oh, well, God, pass you up. The way I'm going this out of my life, if you dare go back on the earth. And the congregation said, and at the end, we have, if what had been done, and agreed, and funded, oh, my. Now, brothers, what does that indicate to you? How did it indicate to me? He has a ministry. Here's a situation previous. Here is a problem breaking. But here is a man of God, the Buddha. So we can say clearly that all the people of God, and there's a glory there. I ask myself, for I want to know, if I thought I know, I don't know about you tonight, I'm not saying that just hiding it, and I'm quite sure it's only leverage because I know you are. I wanted to find out what was the secret of this man's effort. Well, I want to tell you that for what he was. What he was in and what he could open his heart to show where he stood in the front. He said, I'm a father. And I have went on and then with me. To share my administration in poverty. He said, the whole thing that we need to do, we have never seen it. But he has never appropriated the right that he had. Why? He looked at the poverty. You know why he didn't look? You see, if he tells these people that they're not walking in the fear of God, then what are you doing? Paul said, but so did not man. So Paul, he's not telling these people something that he doesn't want to. He's not talking about a conference platform giving a message because he found it in some book or got it from some page, you know, the way they go today. You can hear your own message if you listen to it. So that he's speaking the call he has seen. So what did you do? Was there get an insight to my house. He said, over this long period of time, I have looked at you. And so he says, required not I the bread of the governor, because the bonding was heavy upon me. I said, Lord, that's the God against the Lord. He said, Lord, remember me. Little beloved, if I were going to write an epitaph over Nehemiah's city, I would put these words that he said. Of all that I have done. So, beloved, it's not back to the rule, the principle that we know. It's the men, it's the pattern who lives and who knows that God will have the action. Having lived through, and that climax of chapter 5, the purpose of chapter 6. And chapter 6 gives us the enemy a sailing the struggle of God. Now, let's
Marcus chapter 1. Look at me, Marcus chapter 1. He called a man with conviction. He called a man with his hands in competition. We saw something of the man's character. Hands are translucent, clear, transparent before us. And he stood in the presence of God, in the presence of the king, in the presence of his brother, with all the extra time he had. Excellent. For that, how many chapters not back? Christ has chapter 1. And he's now in the rule of the world. And the enemy has now come. The enemy changed his course because, as you can see, he suggests that instead of open conflict, there should be calm. That's what we need. You understand that? I hope you understand that the rules of the conflict. That if Nehemiah had responded to written invitations to come down to one of these villages on the plain of Ono and to meet with these men, it would have brought the work of God to a total end. Don't misunderstand. Don't you see, the challenge is this. The devil, the enemy has chosen on the level of his consecration. Do you believe God called you to marry? Do you believe that? Do you believe that God filled your hands with the servant of God that you need? You ever testify that was the case? I did.
He said in it, he said, I'm doing it with love.
You know, beloved, it's not a poor thing to say you're called of love.
Very serious.
And when you say it, you can be assured you'll be tested on the level of that level. All the devil wants you to do is to come back. All the enemy wants you to do is to complete. And the moment you concede, the moment you undermine the faith of God. And I want you to notice that this dear man is very, very clear about a goal. Verse number 2, come to me. Verse number 2, to do me. This is. Verse 4, they send unto me. Verse 5, then send some knowledge of servant unto me. And right down to verse number 13, that they might reproach me. He knows that about us. He absolutely knows that, he is the object of the assault. Now, that's the level of concentration. What about the level of character? The devil will attack from every side. Now this man sends a servant with an open letter. Oh, the danger of that. In the Bible, I would turn up some tremendous figures on there. I hear a man with an open letter and a school of accusation. What are you really after, Mr. Nehemiah? Are you not a rebel? Are you not secretly who the biggest by the mirror and the lust to be all the same? Isn't that the whole purpose of your achievement and your approach? And in this foul, slandering, open letter, there was an attack on him. You know, having thrust this letter and its awful accusation into the heart and soul of Nehemiah, surely will bring that. For the good man said, "Say, he said, so now, come, let us take counsel." What that? You know, a man who is absolutely clear for leading the challenges of God and pursue the path that God has called him to tread in absolute confidence and in dependence upon God. And soon as he answers, he says, "O God, strengthen." Now the church. Do you have any conviction, Nehemiah? In these circumstances where the enemy is pressing, would the conviction stand? Well, you do. Well, I suggest that you're too good a man for me. Then you say that. They exercise the kindness that is present. They try to gather compromise that is comfort. Now, if I were you, I would come into the safety of the house of God. Because the whole city, some day, some day, the hundred years. And really, we've come to realize, Nehemiah, that though we may have differences, we're really a very, very good group. You know, the whole cat gets into your room and he starts moving it. That's what he's doing. If I give it a turn, then maybe it's all for costing to the time. It's cost. It's probably the right way, and then it's costly. And that's what it's to be all in the time. Any of that, you're in the temple. The last people, you don't want to lose it. It's as if you were killed. Nehemiah said, how did he go that? Listen, in verse 13 he says, "Therefore what he heard, I should be afraid and do so and..." Have you thought? He wasn't a Levite. He wasn't a priest. He had no right to enter into the day. And he knew that if he had responded, if he had conceded, if he had knuckled down to the spot of the enemy, he would have been sitting there for a while. These enemies just hadn't ruined it for a moment. So the enemy was ruined it. And they touched him in the level of his condition.
remember.
Remember. Oh my God, I will think upon the members of Maya and Sambalat
and
Prophet Hezbollah
and all